Hello, and welcome to Business Talk, brought to you by Business West and sponsored by People's Bank. Hi, I'm Chris Kellogg from the Kellogg Crew Morning Show on 94.7 WMAS. And I'd like to introduce the host of this week's episode. He's the editor of Business West. Here's Joe Bednar.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Business Talk. We have a great show for you today. I can't wait to get to it. But first, we have this important message from our sponsor, People's Bank.
Thank you for listening to the Business Talk podcast, sponsored by People's Bank, bringing you the best in business experts, entrepreneurs, and evangelists. Make Business Talk your innovation break for ideas and inspiration. People's Bank, where commercial banking can fuel your growth and make work life easier. Member FDIC, DIF Equal Housing Lender. Bank at peoples.com/business.
Okay, we're back. And as promised, we have a great show for you today. Our guest is Erica Swallow, a realtor, entrepreneur, accomplished writer, and one of Business West's 40 under 40. In fact, she received the highest total score from our judges among the entire class of 2023, and it's easy to see why. Erica, I'm so happy to have you here on Business Talk.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
So Erica, you have such an interesting story to tell. You grew up in Arkansas. You earned degrees from MIT, NYU, and Simmons, and you worked early on in marketing, technology, and media for some really impressive companies, including the New York Times and Mashable. Tell me about that journey and what your early career goals were like and the work you did.
Yeah, thanks so much for characterizing my journey as interesting. Early on, as a first-generation college student, I had a very simple goal, and that was that I needed to create a sustainable life. So I was a very creative kid. I loved writing and art, but I also was very intrigued with how businesses ran out in the middle of Arkansas. I would receive magazines from New York City. I would look at the editor's page and see, okay, the buildings are located in New York City. Okay, so I have to get there somehow to be able to do this whole media marketing thing. And so that's how I dreamed of going to New York University. I thought if I go there, I should be able to figure this whole thing out and have a creative business job. And so my early career was really about trying to understand how media and marketing worked and how do companies talk with the consumers, us out there, and how can we do that in a way that benefits not just the businesses, but also the consumers. So my first entry point into after college was as the first social media, well, as a senior in college, was the first social media intern at the New York Times. And that was a really cool position because I got to be the New York Times essentially on hundreds of social media channels. And we had about 110 on Twitter. We had 29 on Facebook, all of the different verticals. I was able to connect directly with the journalists who were creating the news that I saw as a kid back in Arkansas. So that's how it all got started.
It's interesting that you said you were the first one in that role. So they were just, I guess they and other media companies were sort of moving into the importance of that role in sharing news across sort of, I guess, a changing media landscape in social media.
Yeah, it was 2008. And I was at a job fair at NYU with my friend who was in the journalism school. And he was so excited to talk to the New York Times, but it turned out they were only there trying to get some insights from the youngins about how to use this thing called social media. And so I, being a marketing intern and having that interest, I, you know, popped into the conversation and, you know, went forward with interviews and such. But that was the goal at that point. And after I graduated, it just happens my mentor and supervisor, Soraya Darby, was going off to start a startup. So I essentially took on her role as a consultant and was then thus leading all the interns that used to be me in figuring out the New York Times presence in social media. It was very cool because I got to work with those big startups we all now know, Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare back in the day, and talking with YouTube about how the New York Times was going to use these platforms. And we got to be an innovator on all of those platforms. Oftentimes the first business and particularly often the first media company to use certain products that, you know, Facebook, when Facebook was changing its page for businesses, different ad units on the homepage, those sort of products we got to use first. It was a fun time.
You were doing writing over the years too for publications as well, right?
Yes. After I left the New York Times, I went to Mashable as an editor. I was there for a little under 2 years, had a really great high growth role there, essentially managing all of the supported content. We went from having just a couple supported content partners to having more than 50 and having million-dollar deals. And at that point, I had been getting contacted by a couple of different media organizations, including Forbes and Entrepreneur Magazine, that wanted me to write with them, but I couldn't because I had a non-compete. So I ended up just making the decision that I wanted to go freelance, and I wrote for those publications as well as others. And at the same time, I started going a little more deep into being a freelance marketer and was working with clients for about half of my time doing social media and content marketing strategy work. And then on the other half, I was writing in business news, mostly features.
Did you find that to be a really gratifying sort of combination of roles? It sounds like it would have been.
It really was. I got to speak with the entrepreneurs who were creating the products, and then I got to go use the products in my consulting marketing work. So it was. I was often at the forefront of learning what the new products were for marketing, digital marketing, and then I would actually get to go try them out, or I would choose not to based on my knowledge. But it was also inspiring because these entrepreneurs and these heads of business and all of these folks I was interviewing were actually leading the type of lives that I wanted to lead as well. So I was getting to, through my writing, get to speak with the people who had somehow in my mind figured it out. Little did I learn, and I did spend almost two decades in digital marketing for startups, I learned that it really is a grind, and it looks like when you're on the outside looking in, wow, they've got it all figured out. But really, anything is always, grass is greener on the other side. And for me, after putting in so much time in the digital marketing world, I realized, oh my gosh, I'm just going to be toiling my life away and making those above me very rich on ideas that myself and my colleagues in the middle level are putting together. Even if I was, in some roles, I was the head of marketing or VP of product, even in those roles, I was always serving someone else and someone else's interests. So I never really felt like I was doing the thing that was true to myself.
It's a thoughtful way to look at it. And when we talk I've been talking to business people for like a quarter century at this magazine. And, we talk about satisfaction on the job. We talk about people want to make a good living, but it's interesting to hear a younger person kind of talking about what, right from the very beginning, thinking about what kind of life you wanted to live and what kind, that sort of balance of, I just think it's important. I don't think enough people do think of it in terms of what kind of life you want to have rather than just kind of what kind of career you have, what kind of money you want to make.
Yeah, a lot of times when you're a kid who struggled, you might have that mentality a little sooner, I think, in life. For myself, we moved around a lot. My parents never had, I mostly grew up in a single parent household, but I had stepdads all the time. It's one of those things where I had such a unstable childhood that I wanted to figure out very early how I could make my adulthood stable. So I've always tried to figure out what am I supposed to be doing here. And when I would find lots of satisfaction in my career, I would often be suffering emotionally or mentally on the other, on the flip side. So I had to figure that one out myself, which was you can be very happy in your career, but you can also be suffering on the inside, whether that's emotionally or mentally, or even for some people physically. They spend so much time sitting at a desk and then now they have back problems. So I try to keep an eye on my whole self, and I don't do the best job of it. I do keep an eye on it, but sometimes I'm also in that role where I've known for a very long time, I'm looking at a particular part of my life and I'm like, something is wrong with this part of my life and I just can't figure it out, but at least I've identified it.
Yeah. We're eventually going to get to talk about your current role as a very successful realtor in the region. So kind of, you sort of take me into the transition as to from the roles you were talking about to where you are, like how did you move from there into real estate? It seems like such an interesting part of the story.
Yeah. So in around 2015, my mom was in a bad position as far as where she was living and the person she was living with. And my first entree into real estate really started there. And I didn't realize it until a couple of years later, but my mom called basically a call for help. And I said, okay, well, let's get you out of there. And my first step was renting her an apartment. And after a year, I just was annoyed because I'm like, I'm renting my apartment. I'm renting her apartment. Like, there's so much rent going on, all this money. And then I thought, why don't I just see if I would have the ability to buy her a house instead of renting one. And so it turns out I did have that ability. I just didn't think that would be, I at the time hadn't thought, oh, this is the time when I'm able to buy my mom a house. And it turned out, oh, okay, I can do that. So I did that. And then being that my mom's can never settle in a spot, she, I think it was about a year and a half later, said, I'd actually like to move from Arkansas, where we both were at the time, to my back home, which is West Virginia, Kentucky. That's where she grew up, and on the state lines. And I said, okay, well, do you have an idea of where you want to live exactly? And she's like, actually, I have the exact same, this is the place I want to live. And she pointed me out to a trailer on 3 acres of land on the top of a hill. And I was like, oh, okay, well. So I sold that house, the first house, and I was able to buy the second one in cash. And I thought, wow, that was amazing. That was less than 2 years. And I'm able to not only, I bought my mom a house, on a mortgage, and now I just totally paid off this trailer in half of the country away. So what else could I do in this industry? So at that point, I decided to start to learn more about it. This was 2019, 2020. And I thought I had wanted to start investing in real estate. There's a lot you could do. But in short, I got to the end of my research and realized I'm very good at marketing. And one of the skill sets of a real estate agent is how to market homes, how to help sellers sell their homes. And then on the other side, you're connecting buyers with the right homes. So I wanted to give that a go. And so my first year in real estate, I was the Real Estate Association of Pioneer Valley Rising Star with the, which is categorized by both sales as well as your involvement in the association, but also leading into my first year at Coldwell Banker, where I am now, I was in the top 10% of agents worldwide. So that was nice to see that I very quickly could start a new career and get somewhere near, my aspirations for myself.
You're listening to Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West and sponsored by People's Bank. We're talking today with Erica Swallow, a local realtor, and much, much more. I had read about being the top 10% of the Coldwell Banker agents worldwide. That's so impressive for someone who's not been in the field very long. But on a broader level, how gratifying is it to help, connect people with homes, especially at a time when the market just seems so, I don't know if volatile is the right word, but it can be challenging.
Yeah, it's a very challenging market since I got in during the pandemic. So I actually got licensed in the early 2021. And so I'm just over 2 years in, and the inventory has been low. There over the pandemic was ridiculously high demand. One offer that I put in for a buyer, which we didn't get, had 55 other offers on the table. It was,
wow.
And that was the extreme, but it was very common. It's been common and still is to see 10, 15 offers on the table for a house. And so you see it all over the news that inventory continues to be low. And so it's very tough. But what I pride myself on is from the selling side, I can create that sort of demand with the type of marketing I do for homes and with Coldwell Banker's national network behind me. And that's kind of why I chose Coldwell Banker. But also on the buying side, I have a good background in negotiation with all the contracts over the years I've had to negotiate. And also I did early on in 2021, I was originally brokered out of the Boston area, Wakefield. So that broker had to be, the competition out in the Boston area is a bit higher even. And so they were ahead of the curve on some of the negotiation terms you need in today's market to be successful as a buyer. So inspections for informational purposes only, or doing an appraisal gap where you pay a certain amount above the appraisal if you're in cash, if you're mortgaging and it doesn't appraise. Or there's just escalation clauses are huge. Escalating a price up to a certain point where you kind of tell them your bottom, like we're willing to pay $300,000 with a $2,000 escalation factor up to $328,000. you have to show a bona fide offer on the other end. But all of these terms, I didn't realize that having that education from Eastern Mass actually helped me in my couple years. Now these terms are a little more common, but I still run into other agents who don't utilize them. And so it is very gratifying to be able to use my business background to be able to apply it to real estate, which is obviously business, but I think different people run their businesses different ways. Makes me feel really good to help a buyer out when you're in one of those 10 plus offer situations and you actually win.
Sure. Absolutely. Kind of shifting gears a tiny bit. Greg Thomas, who directs the Berthium Center for Entrepreneurship at UMass Amherst, who knows a little more than I do about entrepreneurship, he nominated you for the 40 under 40, and he wrote at length in his nomination about your involvement in the local entrepreneurship ecosystem. Tell me about how that came about and why you have a passion for it.
It came about when I first moved to Springfield in 2019. I was trying to understand the entrepreneurship ecosystem out here. Ever since I graduated from MIT, where I have a MBA and a concentration in entrepreneurship and innovation, I had been thinking of ways that I can help my local market with creating more entrepreneurs, getting more kids interested in entrepreneurship. So I'll just go back actually quickly to 2015 when I did graduate. I went back to my home state of Arkansas and was working with a technology education nonprofit that focuses on getting entrepreneurship and public service education into the K-12 system. So I basically was trying to connect my past as a kid, not realizing that starting a business was something that a poor kid like me could do. I had always thought, I had friends whose families owned pizza shops or lawn care services, or they were, one of the executives at the local bank. And I thought all of these people were just, they can do that because they're well educated. And then once they, once they decide they want to do something themselves, then they do it. So that was something I actually only learned, I would say, after college, after my time at the New York Times. I still hadn't at that point realized I could be an entrepreneur. So I wanted to try, one of my missions in life is to make sure that kids, and especially K-12, but definitely in college, let them know that entrepreneurship and coming up with your own ideas and trying to solve problems that you see around you is an option. And it's not something that only someone with immediate resource access has. So when I got here, back in Arkansas, I did that. And I ended up going to Silicon Valley and working at a similar ed tech nonprofit, doing the same thing more nationally. But anywhere I go, I really want to connect with the local entrepreneurship education scene and see how I can be a mentor and be helpful. So the very first person I actually connected with was Gregory Thomas, the executive director of the UMass Amherst Berthium Center for Entrepreneurship, to say, what is this ecosystem all about and where could I plug in? And so he got me really plugged in at the Berthium Center. And I have been active volunteering there as a mentor and a judge to their innovation competitions.
One thing that I meant to ask about before when we were talking about your writing, and I don't want to miss out on it because I think it's so important, interesting. You wrote children's books. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that's a part of that same mission is my colleague, Lee Zung, who's an illustrator and just a great designer overall. She works in Silicon Valley at a tech company. She and I got together and we had the same vision back in Arkansas. We wanted to teach kids as young as possible about entrepreneurship and that kids can be entrepreneurs. So we created, we thought of many ideas. We could do a calendar, we could do a coffee table book, we could do a podcast. There's so many things we could create. And the one we decided that we both were really excited about was creating a children's book series about kid entrepreneurs. So we created the Little Launchers series. It is a 4-book picture book series about real kids with real businesses. And it's still out there. You can go find it on Amazon. It technically can be found in other bookstores, but you have to have them order it because we're not that famous. but Lee, she illustrated it and I wrote them. We traveled all around the country talking with these entrepreneurs and just getting really inspired with their work. Definitely check out this series. It basically, for example, one of the entrepreneurs is Gabby Goodwin. She not only created a new hair clip, but she actually has a patent on it. It's a special type of hair clip that keeps textured hair in the clip, because she as a kid would go to school and lose all of her hair clips. So she and her mom came up with this idea when she was 5 years old, like, what, how can we redesign this hair clip? And so now she's now a teenager, and she's been running this business with her mom ever since. But she's one of the four kids. She is a very big fan of the book series and uses it herself in her own speaking to educate young entrepreneurs from her perspective. Sometimes it's easier for someone younger to also give that message.
What a great message for young people to have an idea and to do something that affects people's lives with. I think it's a great topic for books that would inspire kids. We only have about a minute or so left. You are being celebrated on June 15th at the 40 Under 40 Gala. Our quickly sold out event every year. I'm so excited about it. I enjoy being part of that every year and meeting all folks like you. Just give me your impressions of the quality and depth of the young professionals of this region. I mean, when you kind of network and speak to folks and kind of see the sort of talent we have here, what are your impressions?
Much like the housing market, I would say that the talent market over here is almost a hidden gem, because you know, these days you're seeing with the housing market people coming from Boston, New York, and they're all like, whoa, I didn't know this place, Springfield, or like, what's in Western Mass? This is an interesting place. It has a great quality of life out here, and the homes are beautiful. You get lots of space. I would say the talent is similar, because you have a lot of people who are attracted here because of the lifestyle mostly, or I would say, or they grew up here and they come back. But I've been so impressed with everyone I've met. Many entrepreneurs are just, you know, they grew up here and they didn't even go away maybe. But there are quite a few of those grew up in Springfield and came back and are now doing really big things. I'm thinking of like Kenny Lumpkin of Dewey's, for example, or I think of Ray Berry of White Lion. These are examples of individuals who I networked with early on as well, and are just impressed with the vision they have for the region. And I feature young and old professionals in my series, Best in the Nest, too. Part of my own goal as a realtor is to attract more people to live in Pioneer Valley in Western Mass. And the Best of the Nest series is that is all about highlighting the best local businesses. And it features the entrepreneurs in the videos themselves. It's a great highlight of all the great efforts that are happening in this region, and just really the best of the best in I would say in our state and even region. It's not just best in Western Mass. It's really, I'm focusing on like the quality of the foods and services that are highlighted in that series are really, you would find the same thing in New York or Boston.
Where can people access that?
That's on YouTube. So you can look up the Turnberg and Swallow team YouTube channel and find the Best in the Nest series video series.
Excellent. I hope people do. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We had a lot to talk about, and that was fun. Thank you so much for being on with me today.
Yeah, it was a blast. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of you for tuning into Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West, sponsored by People's Bank. I'm Joe Bednar, the editor of Business West, and we'll see you next time.